Welcome to all of you. My name is Dorothy Bass. I'm with one of the coordinators of this summer's teaching program at Holden Village. This is Harry Meyer, who's been teaching about the early church this week. He's a member of the teaching staff. And this is Faith Meyer, who has been here at Holden now for 3 weeks, very involved with children during that time, but also as part of the educational committee in her church and as a music minister. And this session began as the three of us tried to deal with our own young children up on the patio 2 or 3 weeks ago. As we started to talk about our concerns as parents for our children, our concerns about the extent to which they're welcome here at Holden, the extent to which they're really welcome in our local churches. So we started as parents, and all of us are parents, but implicit in our concern all along is our own conviction that the children of the church belong to the church as a whole, and that even people who aren't parents are related to the church's children through the vows that we make at baptism and through our common membership in the body of Christ. So we wanted to continue our conversation and to open it up to other people, to find out what your concerns are, to look for positive models of things that churches can do to help children grow in faith. And that's the nature of this particular session. We hope it'll be a conversation. We will each have some input later on in the session, but we're really hoping that you all will share and will be involved. So we want to start with some discussion questions to get us all into it, okay?
What are the ages of your children?
I have 6.5-year-old twins and a 13-year-old.
And we have a 4-year-old, a 2-year-old, and an 8-month-old. So preschoolers.
So, but is there a reason for asking the different kinds of things that emerge?
19 and 17.
Mm-hmm.
What we thought when our children were small is not what it's turning out to be. I mean, we did the things that we thought were the right things.
Right. 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 Which would indicate there's a certain amount of, whatever we might do, there's a certain lack of control that our children come as guests and as gifts, and we can't determine what will become of them. Henry Nouwen has the image of children as guests in our lives. To whom we owe hospitality and service and love, but whom we don't finally possess. So, thanks for that. We wanted to suggest that we start off in small groups, and we'll give you some questions to discuss, and then bring back the common findings to our common conversation, okay? And the first question, if you would get into groups of perhaps 5 people or so, so that we can have some conversation. Okay, the first question that we would like you to think about, share with each other about, is the question, what would it be like to be a child in your church, in your home church? What would you, as a child, probably experience, perceive there? Try to be positive and negative. Try to imagine this in terms of all the senses, as well as the explicit things that go on. Okay? And go ahead. What would it be like to be a child in your home church? Okay, as you talk, let me ask you to add another dimension to the conversation, which is your own memories of being a child in the church or a young person in the church. I mean, not so much to see, have things changed, but also even more to experientially be able to connect to what might be happening for children in the churches today. What do you remember as positive and negative about being in the church? And add that experiential memory of your own into the conversation as you continue. So, well, I hope we've stirred the pot, getting some of the concerns and issues raised in your minds. Anybody like to call out some of the issues that emerged for you? What are the kind of things we need to think about when we think about children in the church?
Post-confirmation dropouts.
Okay. Okay, good.
That was a big one in our group, too.
Okay. They say the largest growing group in the American religious population is the confirmation class dropouts from the mainline churches.
That's right.
No, there's sociological research. Okay, good. These are issues we want to look at.
Mm-hmm. I think one you brought up earlier is just a welcoming or hospitality. How hospitable or welcoming are we to the children?
We talked about parents who drop their children off. And how can you get those parents
involved? Okay. Is it, okay, getting parents involved?
Another one was communion of children.
Is what?
Communion of children.
Before confirmation.
Let's say communion of small children.
Okay. John, what was the one thing you said you wanted the church to do for you that Christ Lutheran Church doesn't? He said, let everyone come to communion. I asked him just now, what does the church need to do? He said, let everyone come to communion. John had his first communion two weeks ago at Holden's Village Center Eucharist. Okay. Others? Just call them out. Okay.
The issue of preschoolers in worship, sort of whether there is supposed to be like a Sunday school for them or whether they are welcome.
Okay. Preschoolers in the nursery? Is that the nursery
question?
Yeah, that
question? Idea.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any others you want
to? Establishing traditions like program, like a Christmas program or a Lenten festival or kind of support.
Right.
The church.
Are we getting there?
Mm-hmm. Well, one issue we talked about, I don't think we answered, but whether it was more appropriate to have Sunday school or separate worship for children that would feed their needs better, or mm-hmm. to have children and adults worship together.
Right. I would want to add, I guess, the involvement of adults besides parents in programs for children.
Mm-hmm. We had a vacation Bible school one year that I thought was special on a weeknight for a couple hours, and it was intergenerational. Mm-hmm. So there were grandparents there mm-hmm. and people without children of any age besides the kids.
Mm-hmm. That's good. The church is one of the few places in society where we are not, in principle, segmented by age and status. And there's such an opportunity there in our very fragmented society. Okay. Any other issues? Should we move on ahead? Harry, why don't you go ahead?
Well, I want to say a little bit about baptism and the church, because we, as of course Lutheran churches and other confessional mainstream denominations, baptize infants, And how then does the life of the church relate to what we do with children in education? And I just want to read to you what we, those of us who are here as Lutherans and who have been at baptismal services, what we promise to do. We say, after the person has been baptized, we welcome you into the Lord's family. We receive you as a fellow member of the body of Christ, child of the same Heavenly Father, and worker with us in the kingdom of God. And one of the ways that this has been expressed for us as Lutherans has been through having an intentional program of education. So we have a Sunday school, and then we have a confirmation, and the parents themselves promise to have the children instructed in the faith, and so on and so forth. And this really, I think, is this link of baptism and education is one that actually goes back to the early church, where typically one was received a religious instruction during Lent, and then at the end of Lent, at the service before Easter Sunday, on the eve of Holy Saturday or the Easter Vigil, people may have had Easter Vigils in their own churches, there would be all the baptisms. And then the week following that, the week following Easter Sunday, then there would be further instruction now into the meaning of the sacraments and into the meaning of those parts of the service where typically people who were baptized weren't allowed to participate. So the practice of the church then was that in this 40-day period leading up to Easter, people who were candidates for baptism would have to leave the service at a certain point. So they wouldn't even be allowed to see the Eucharist being celebrated. That was regarded as a mystery, if you will, a transcending mystery for the baptized. Now they receive Holy Communion, and now then they are instructed in, now that you've received it, what does this mean? And that link of baptism and education, I think, is a very important one, and one that we've tried to retain in our own Lutheran tradition, also in the Roman tradition and other traditions. So we baptize children, if you will, and then after baptizing children, we say, now that God has made you someone, now we're going to tell you what that means, or we're going to help you to understand what that means. And the fact that happens in the Christian community is a sense then, or a symbol then, that these are our children. In other words, I as a parent don't bring my child to the church to have my child educated. Rather, there's a sense in which now that my child is a part of this community, it is our community now who is educating. So this question, which I've often struggled about, of getting parents involved, is somehow trying to help, say, the parent who drops their child off for Sunday school and then picks their child up and so on.
Who never attends worship either.
Right.
Who aren't involved.
Right. So somehow helping parents to know that the education of their child just isn't their responsibility, but in fact it's the responsibility of the whole church. I mean, this child who's being dropped off is a member of our community. And as a member of our community, then that means then that this child, theoretically then, is to be welcomed in our worshiping services, because education happens also in what happens in community worship, and so on. So somehow breaking down the individualism, which seems to pervade our understanding of parenthood and so on, with a more of a communal understanding of the place of children in the church. It seems that the early church had a better sense of that. And our society is so individualistic that to try to break that is difficult. So I see that as one of the major challenges for the issue of whether our children, or what form of faith their children will have as they grow. I think it's important to remember that we believe that, and the reason why we baptize children is because we believe that God in the waters of baptism promises that God will always have God's hand on that particular child. So there will always be a relationship, if you will, from God's side. So it isn't a question whether they whether they'll have faith, because faith here understood this as having some kind of relationship with God, whether it's reciprocated or not, but rather what kind of faith will our children have? Will they act in response to their baptism? Will they act responsibly? And I see that as a very communal kind of issue. That's an issue that faces all of us together as members of a community. That is to say, we take these words of welcome seriously.
Any comments or questions or issues on this?
One of the things we do at our church is when a child is baptized, someone in the congregation, not a relative and not a good friend, is assigned that child, or you know, that you choose somebody. Mm-hmm. And then you send them for each month you send them. It's a thing for the parents to talk about, your child is doing this at this age.
Cradle role, I think it's called.
Yeah, I don't even know what it is. But anyway, it was nice because in our church you do it as a person who doesn't know that child, and you get to know that family, and you pray for that family until the child goes into Sunday school and continues. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was kind of a neat deal to kind of have that feeling of community, and not from somebody that's already a relative or good friend.
I like that model because oftentimes baptism is seen as a kind of rite of passage. That is to say that, I've had a parent say to me that, because I'm a pastor, so I've done lots of pre-baptismal counseling, and I've had a parent say to me that, why do you want your child baptized? Well, because, if it dies, then it won't go to hell. So it's a kind of insurance policy. So there's no sense at all there in that understanding of a community. Mm-hmm. There's a purely individual kind of model mm-hmm. of baptism. So therefore, they're not going to take, I would guess they wouldn't take Christian education very seriously.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Are there other pastors here who, have you been approached to do private baptisms?
Sure.
And how do you respond to that?
Well, I think along your line, the emphasis on, one of the primary emphases I see of baptism is the connection with the community, living with that community, growing with that community, and the process of helping one another in the spiritual journey that we all embark on, in our baptisms.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Serving in Texas, I got some requests from adults who want to private baptisms, and I tried to talk them out of it. Because the witness is a very special one. I think the baptizing of infants made them feel very self-conscious that they had to do it sooner.
It's interesting because from my perspective, an adult baptism is one of the most exciting things that happens in my Lutheran
Absolutely.
Community.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's such a wonderful thing for the community.
One man, the other pastor baptized him and his son, but they definitely wanted to wear white robes and everything, and it's really special.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
This session began when, out of a practical problem with this child that my husband and I were facing, which is that for the last 2 or 3 years, every Sunday at our local ELCA congregation in Indiana, he has said, "Mommy, I want some of that bread. Why can't I have some?" And when we came to Holden, we realized that here it would be possible. And I raised this question with Harry, as I knew would be theologically informed about these things. And Harry gave me a response, which I would like you to share with others. But as a result, we did take we asked John to accompany us up to communion. And I think it was very important to him. Would you say what you told me? I mean, this was just the parents' agony, sort of trying to live within a congregation and do what's right.
Yeah, let me say that I belong to the Evangelical Lutheran Church in Canada, which is a sister body to the ELCA. And our church nationally has, not without some discord, has argued over and discussed concerning what we call communion of the baptized, which means that it is, if you will, according to the ELCIC, your birthright as a Christian to receive the gifts of grace in the Holy Eucharist, and so this is now a national policy, in our church, that all baptized peoples are welcome to the Lord's table. And the reason why our church has taken that stand is because we believe that certainly faith has a cognitive element. And there is a sense in the Lutheran tradition that one is not to receive the bread and the wine unworthily, and that has been interpreted as coming to Holy Communion, if you will, with the correct understanding. That's how some people have interpreted that. But if it is a mystery, then none of us come to Holy Communion with the correct understanding. And furthermore, faith is a kind of response, but more importantly, faith is a gift given by God, and we believe given in baptism. Faith is certainly has a cognitive element, but for Luther, primarily faith has a relational element, right? Faith means being in right relationship with God, and that right relationship is given in baptism. So then, if children are, or if all the baptized then are in principle in right relationship with God, the child is baptized, and if communion is an expression of that, then there should be no reason why all children, whatever age, whatever understanding they have, shouldn't be welcomed to the Lord's table.
You know, one of the things I appreciated in your remark about that too is you said that the children leave after, they stay for the children's sermon, they leave during the sermon of the adults and come back for the Eucharist again, whereas our children leave and they never come back for the rest of the service. And I think that's something that's wonderful about that as well, in addition. They feel more that they're participating in the community because they're a part of that Eucharist service too.
From my perspective, I really, if we as Lutherans take our theology seriously and we believe that Jesus Christ is present, really, truly, in the bread and the wine, then how ironic to have children not be there. When we have all those passages in the Gospels of suffer not the little children to come unto me. I mean, here is Jesus present in our community, present in the word which is proclaimed, but then present corporally, if you will, in the bread and the wine, and then children aren't there.
Our daughter was baptized twice. She was baptized as an infant and then decided as a student at PLU that she wanted to be baptized in the Baptist church. So she has been baptized twice. We told her that wasn't necessary, but I think she wanted to experience that herself. So that was a peculiar situation, I thought, but not for her.
That's interesting that the Lutheran Church, I know, in the Northwest, the Lutheran part of it, our church has just begun communing children at any age. It's up to parents and the pastor. They have a workbook that they want the kids to go through, and my 8-year-old is now communing. He was one of the ones that really fought to do this. And what's interesting, though, even though we've been doing it now for maybe 9-10 months, is he's only one of two kids that actually follow through with it. And that we always have a communion assistant, and if it's not the pastor communion on his side, he often has to stop the assistant because they'll walk right by him. And one time he did, and I said, well, just grow. it's like they're still resisting. They don't want to assume, so they just walk by.
See, and our kids are so little. I know my 2-year-old, I've seen that almost happen to him. And he just sort of is standing there, you know, hey, I know that's mine. And it's really neat to see him, like, he knows, like, we'll say, oh, it's time to go get our bread from Jesus now. And he's just all excited, oh, Jesus, Jesus. And he feels so comfortable with it. But I think that's really going to be neat growing up. Well, mind you, I guess he might go to some other churches sometime where he learns that it's not like that for everybody. But they're young enough. I mean, they certainly don't have the theological grasp and all that stuff, but I'm really pleased that they are growing up with receiving communion from day one.
My 4-year-old's ready. Every month while we were visiting the pastor, they will commune her, and she loves it. And she always runs back up, I took communion.
I realize that there's a big difference between the Eucharist and tradition. I'm not suggesting that, but as you get older, it is better to remember that you were given something than denied something. So that certainly would be a better memory as a teenager.
Faith, do you want to go ahead with your comments,
sure,
too?
I think they're relevant. Sure. Yeah. Yeah, I was just going to give a brief comment on the issue of formal education in the church, i.e. what we've been talking about, a Sunday school confirmation. And basically I wanted to raise two questions. What are the intentions of the church in educating children in formal settings? And how can these intentions best be carried out? I came up with three models of what are the intentions of the church in educating children in formal settings. The first is to babysit. Now, obviously, I'm talking about younger children particularly here, but older ones as well at times. This is especially where Sunday school replaces worship. The idea that children are being babysat or just sort of maintained while the real Christians are worshiping, and they aren't really part of the community. Your children are basically put up with kind of until they're old enough to reason or to articulate their faith. The second model, I don't know if this is totally fair, but indoctrination was the word I came up with. That's where we're systematically teaching Bible stories and accompanying church doctrines from a fairly early age. Behind this model is the belief that children are, or it can be that they're kind of little sinners who need to turn to Christ sort of as soon as possible, so let's get them learning. That's where you can get some people, particularly I think some of these parents who want to bring their kids to church, they want them to learn the morals, good morals, so that they'll be, good, clean, respectable people kind of idea. A concern I have here is that children may be being given answers to questions that they aren't even yet asking. The third model is, and again, this is just an arbitrary title, being hatched. Here the seed has been fertilized at baptism, and children are being given an experience of the faith community. They're being told Bible stories in the context of these biblical characters are their sort of ancestors in faith. So children are being sort of prepared to later embrace maybe more the Christian doctrines once their mind is able to do so, maybe in confirmation. I think in this model is where we would get that, the term being formed in faith. What that actually means, what that actually entails in practical reality, I don't know, but it seems just almost being in the community is an essential part of being formed like that. Then that second question, how can these intentions then best be carried out, depending on which model you like. I like that last one, being hatched. I think we need to look at church structures and programs and think about whether they need to be changed. In the last 100 years, the idea of Sunday school confirmation has remained intact, while the societal view of children and childhood has radically changed in many ways. We no longer view children as blank slates primarily, to be molded and dealt with as parents and teachers and pastors deem necessary, but rather as unique and respect-worthy children from day one. Should this new understanding of who children are and new information on how childhood experiences affect us for the rest of our lives affect the way we approach Christian education and its timing as well? Sunday school seems to be based on the school model, basically that there are certain facts and truths to be dispensed. There's a curriculum. Just as much of the curriculum in public school education is irrelevant to life, how much of what children learn and experience at Sunday school is actually irrelevant to their formation in faith and possibly even detrimental. And talking especially to people a generation ahead of me, I really wonder if a lot wasn't even detrimental.
But a lot of us are the ones that are still here. I wonder about that too.
Yeah.
I want to talk to Dave and I want to talk to Eric. I want to say that the only young people here.
Yeah.
But I mean, you're talking to those of us that are here, grew up with, you didn't take communion until you had confirmation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe we need to look at both sides of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. 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 Well, and just a few things I've heard about changing traditional Sunday school programs. One thing that someone had mentioned to Harry once was that you should just take all the children and put them in a big room with all these great toys and great snacks, great everything. Just sort of, that's what church is. It's just being in community and having a great time in terms of, I mean, when they're really young, okay? Just so that in their mind, church is just a great place to be. And a great place to know people and things. And then sort of when they're, I mean, this is just an interesting thought. And then sort of when they're old enough, kind of, then you're introducing more and more kind of thing. I mean, that's sort of on one end of the spectrum, what some people would like to see, to sort of quit trying to indoctrinate these little children. Another one, which I think is sort of has to do with that concern about parents just sort of dropping their kids off, is maybe dealing as well with educating parents a lot, because you know, in other, like health matters and things, we don't expect children to sort of care for themselves. Like, parents have this responsibility. It seems that in the church, rather than dealing with children as individuals, as if they're responsible for their own spiritual growth and everything, we should be maybe dealing more with parents as well. And just to look at what this is saying to children, that parents aren't at all involved in the faith community, and yet they are welcome. Somehow it doesn't really jive. That also has to do with the belief that faith is not so much taught as caught. So that if you have, you know, parents who aren't involved at all, is that going to catching take place?
Any, do others have things to share about what faith is saying about the educational programs in your churches, the specific things that are done for children? I think that the Sunday school model is just a very, very institutionally powerful one, which has come to us within the American setting. There was no such thing as Sunday schools 150 years ago. In any denomination that I'm aware of, there were confirmation classes, and there were certain kinds. There was catechesis in the family, instruction in the family. Most schools were religious schools 150 years ago, whether you're talking about Sweden, Norway, and England, or talking about the United States. Schools were religious, and one could learn some religious information there. But there were not Sunday schools. And on the American scene, I think what happened was that amidst the challenges of transferring and nurturing religious traditions in a frontier society, a number of institutions sprang up which together would provide a context that would form people in faith, including public schools that were Protestant-tinged, okay, parochial schools for some communities, including some Lutheran communities, seminaries, okay, which are a fairly recent invention, higher education, voluntary associations, YMCAs and Walther League and so on, all the different associations that people could belong to, Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts, you know, a whole set of, and also, the media. Newspapers used to cover sermons. Okay, there were lots and lots of religious magazines. Children's books tended to be religious. So that I think 100 years ago in this country, in most Protestant groups, there was a whole matrix of formation in place, which included the Sunday school, but which included a lot of other things as well. And educational historians talk about this as an ecology, a whole ecology of education, with different institutions making their contributions. And it seems to me that over a period of time, partly for very good and important reasons having to do with the increasing plurality of American society, such that the public schools could not teach Protestant Christianity, okay, some of those are important positive changes. Different pieces of the ecological system have fallen to the wayside, and that more and more of our eggs are in the Sunday school basket at this point. There's more pressure on the family. you know, the schooling model is strong, and that more and more we put a job that can't be done in an hour a week on that place. Yeah.
I, in my own second-grade classroom, am a developmentally appropriate teacher, and I want the same thing to be happening in Sunday school. I think at a very young age, mm-hmm. what is developmentally appropriate is to just have a playtime and a community thing. While I see that, for many people, one more day of the week to get up early yeah. and to get my yeah. kids to this wonderful community sense mm-hmm. thing mm-hmm. is just not... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, they get up on Saturday morning and run all their errands that they can't do the rest of the week and make it to McDonald's at lunchtime, and it's a real hurry mm-hmm. kind of mm-hmm. atmosphere. I see a need for some time to be slow and late, that if we could just make our worship service more kid-orientated mm-hmm. so that, you know, if we get them there by church service time. Because I think with Sunday school... It's really hard to get people mm-hmm. to get their kids up and moving that fast.
Mm-hmm.
And
then I see other complaints that they don't want to come that late because then it takes up the whole day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So then they want to come earlier. So that wouldn't necessarily work.
Are any of you in congregations that are trying Saturday night family services? Is that helping?
We just started this summer.
Just started. There's one church in our community that does this. Hear good things.
One thing that our church does, our pastor has designed this unique kind of program. It's called a weekday school, which happens on Wednesday night, where every second week the parents of the confirmands and of the youth group make supper for all the children, and then they have a meal together. And then the younger folks go off to their confirmation classes or whatever, and then the parents stay together and they clean up, which has the effect of creating community. People end up being in the community kind of whether they like it or not. So those who bring their children to confirmation then have the responsibility of participating in this program. But that is that's an attempt to move the model away from everything on Sunday morning to sometime during the week.
But do all of the parents attend? I mean, do they take part in this? Because there's always dropouts, and you know, I wonder.
Yeah. Well.
Successful something like that.
Yeah. My parish pastor is very. He is a convert from the Missouri Synod. So he's an ELCIC pastor now, and so he has a kind of a hair pastor kind of model, which basically is a hierarchical one. And he basically says, you know, it's either this way or no way. So that's his kind of, and he lays it out. Mm-hmm. I don't think it can really. I wonder how well it would work mm-hmm. without that kind of model.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let me say something about the confirmation. Post-confirmation dropouts and age. And there has been a lot of research done on this in American mainstream Protestantism in the last 5 or 10 years, because if you look at the reason that some of the mainline churches are not growing, and many of them have been in terrible decline for 20 years, you go out and find out what happened to those people, they were people who were confirmed and now don't go to church. I mean, they're out to brunch on Sunday mornings. They're out on their boats, they're out doing other things. They have not joined the fundamentalist groups. They have not gone off into sectarian movements. They just don't go to church anymore. Confirmation has changed historically over the centuries since the Reformers. There's still, I think, in the Lutheran Church, there tends to be a good bit of content about the faith that probably is presented. But increasingly it seems to me that even Lutherans are adopting a model which I think has become very dominant in other American Protestant denominations, which is, in a sense, subtly, this is the child's time to confirm the church rather than the church's time to confirm the child. Saying, what is your faith? No, what is your favorite verse? What is your feeling as an individual about becoming a Christian? And so that in the style of American individualism, the child confirms the church, as well as having the church confirm the child, perhaps increasingly so. I don't know if that rings any bells for people. And then also, there seems to me to be a pattern in many congregations that, you know, the parents will say, okay, you have to go through confirmation, then it's your choice, because choice is so much part of the model. And perhaps that's appropriate for teenagers who have to find their way. But there's a very interesting study that was done by a man named Bill Myers, who teaches in Chicago, about youth ministry, called Black and White Styles in Youth Ministry. And he studied two different congregations and their youth ministries, one of them a well-to-do white suburban congregation, and the other an inner-city black church. And in the inner-city black church, there was a feeling by, and it was a mainline church, but all the parents, the whole congregation, was terrified of what might become to their teenagers if they didn't guard them. I mean, if we don't keep them, they will be lost, you know, in spiritually, but also to gangs, also in, you know, in the kinds of threats that these parents and the whole community was concerned about the threats to their community and to teens in their community. In the white suburban congregation, the real message that seemed to be given was, what we really want is for you to do well in this school, because there's a lot of competition to get into college. If you don't have time for youth group, we'll understand as long as you're studying or doing extracurricular activities. So in other words, that being a good person and a successful American middle class college-bound person is what counted. Whereas in the black church, saving, you know, in a very complete sense, saving these youngsters from Satan, you know, they would say, and his works, you know, was, and it became a very religious thing. So in the black church, even though they have a tremendously charismatic, powerful, popular pastor who draws thousands every week, every fifth Sunday, and you don't know when it is, a teenager preaches. So these people who come 2 hours early to wait to hear Pastor Wright might just be disappointed. Because the whole congregation, they rehearse this and they set this kid up. It's wonderful. And in the white church, there was not really the expectation that teens would attend worship, really. I mean, they could hang out, you know, they could do other things. Neither of these churches was Lutheran. One was Presbyterian, one was United Church of Christ. But I think it rings true to me, the way in which our cultural values and our cultural challenges come in to play in what we expect of our youth. I grew up as a Presbyterian, liberal, suburban kind of setting. And I really kind of got the message that being a good citizen and being a good Presbyterian were all just about exactly the same thing. You know, if you didn't break certain moral rules. And that's very different from a sense of the church really reaching out to embrace people as church. You were nodding your head. Does this ring bells in your memory?
I was going to say that I just graduated from St. Olaf. And of course, there's a lot of people that grew up in the Lutheran Church there. And I would say, based on everyone I've asked, I would say 90% of the students there would say that their confirmation meant absolutely nothing to them. And that's only because I don't know a single person. I never met a person who said it didn't mean anything. Mm-hmm. And that's me included. Mm-hmm. I went to a very large Lutheran church, and we had 180 in my confirmation class. And the pastor told us on our rehearsal day, he said, I'm going to ask you, we're going to go up to the altar in a big group, and I'm going to ask you two questions. And in case the microphone doesn't work or something, the answer is yes. Not surprising, I left the church after confirmation. Yeah. I was one of the ones that went to a fundamentalist church. Uh-huh. I went to evangelical free because I didn't feel part of the church at all, and I felt very outside. Mm-hmm. I didn't go to community. The kids don't want to go to community, so I felt very outside. Another thing we haven't talked about is youth groups. And youth groups have a tough time too, because
it's a popularity contest for junior high and senior high kids. If the Baptists are going skiing this Friday,
yeah, right.
I'm a Baptist, but yeah. Cut for only $10. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And all your friends go. And that's really, youth directors have such a tough time.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know what the problem is with the confirmation. I think, I don't know who should teach the confirmation classes. If you've got pastors teaching them, pastors sometimes aren't never expected to teach. I don't know. I'm not a pastor.
That's the part that I really struggle with in my own ministry is that, you know, who teaches or who does it? Because in some other cultures where we have puberty rites, which is essentially what confirmation is supposed to be in our church, you've got, like in the indigenous American culture, you've got the uncle maybe taking the nephew out into the wilderness on his vision quest, and there's a relational aspect to that, which we somehow, I mean, that's a start to have them in the kitchen, but I think even beyond that, I wonder whether there's some way that we need to have people involved with them in that, you know, and I don't know what the answer is. Mm-hmm. There.
Mm-hmm. Eric, do you want to say something?
Yeah,
we need to break
this. About my experience in confirmation. When I talked to my mother about her confirmation, one difference I really noticed was that it went on for a longer period of time and was more of a struggle. I think my mother felt more of a sense of accomplishment because confirmation was harder. You actually had to learn something. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was, I mean, I think it is for the best that I've always been brought up in very progressive churches. But as far as on the education line, I didn't learn anything at all because it was just too easy to slip through the system. Mm-hmm. I was a very lazy person. I never learned anything that I didn't have to learn.
Well, I think we'll have to continue this conversation over meals and around the village, but thank you all very much for sharing.
No problem.
No.
No.